Now we mentioned your degree earlier. I mean, you've got a scholarship to be to do track and field. So what happens with your degree at this point?
Well, basically what happened was as I made the football team, they switched my scholarship from track to football. And as I went through the process of the draft and all that, I was always focusing on my academics because I realized that that's something no one can take from me. And it was my goal to graduate. No one in my family, immediate family, had ever graduated from college, so it was a goal. So when I got drafted by the Browns, I only had to complete my internship, and my major was sports marketing. So that fall, when I was on injured reserve with the Cleveland Browns, when I could only go to meetings and watch practice because I was rehabbing, I went and worked in their public relations department, and then I worked in their sales department, and then I worked in their marketing department to complete my degree, meaning that was my internship. So once I finished that, then I graduated. I went back home, and I graduated. And so it was kind of cool because not only did, obviously, I get hurt through the Cleveland Browns camp, but they also, you know, gave me the opportunity to complete my degree by working in those departments, which is all I needed. So it's one thing I'm proud of as an athlete, because a lot of athletes will leave school and go pursue their career, their sports career, but I didn't. I finished my degree. I finished what I started.
Now, you moved to the Dallas Cowboys, but you moved to the Cowboys at exactly the wrong time, just a quirk of fate.
Yeah. So that next year I got cut by the Browns, and which was unfair. I was still rehabbing. I wasn't 100%. But the Dallas Cowboys were willing to give me a shot, and they put me on their practice squad, and I practiced all year and really used that year to get stronger. But the team was so bad, and I can recall that first year because it was Jimmy Johnson's first year as a head coach in the NFL. Troy Aikman was a rookie. Emmitt wasn't there. Michael Irving had an ACL tear. And it was the craziest year for me as an athlete because we were 1-15. That team was so bad. And when the season was over, they didn't really think I was going to be ready. And I said, I don't want to be here anyway. You guys are never winning a Super Bowl. So I leave. And as you know, they go on to win 3 Super Bowls.
I'm sure that's not connected in any way. But you moved to the Kansas City Chiefs where your career really takes off. So tell us about the first NFL game that you played, your first experience of playing big league football.
Yeah, the first experience was definitely my coming out party, so to speak, because by the time I got to the Chiefs, Chris, I was 100%. I was running faster than ever. My speed was much better. I was better as a football player in every way. And they gave me my shot. And early on, right when I got activated, I scored my first touchdown. It was a 33-yard touchdown against the Seattle Seahawks, you know, 3 hours away from my home. My entire family was there. But when I scored that touchdown, I remember not spiking the ball and keeping the ball because it was the exclamation mark on a long journey filled with obstacles, setbacks, negativity, dream stealers, questioning what I was doing, but I never lost focus on the goal, and that was really where my career started to launch.
Now, you'd married your college sweetheart in 1990, so what was the impact of your NFL career on that side of your life, the family life?
Yeah, it was an interesting period for my wife and I because we had dated 3 years in college and then we got married my third year in the NFL, which was my first year with the Chiefs. And I remember we got married and we're driving out to Kansas City with everything we have in the world. We just came off our honeymoon. We have a honeymoon baby on the way. And there was a lot of pressure because I remember, Chris, when I went into the Chiefs camp, I had a great camp. But they actually cut me. But Marty Schottenheimer said, don't leave. We're going to get you on this team. I just need a couple of weeks. So I stayed put. But I remember the pressure that year because I didn't make a lot of money my first year. So we were kind of living off of what I had made. By the time I got cut by the Chiefs, I can recall having $300 in the bank and not having much money to really support my family. And there was a lot of pressure. And Marty Schottenheimer wanted me to sit there in Kansas City. And I just remember the stress and how I was so worried. But Marty said this was going to happen. and it happened. And they really did bring me in, and then the career took off. But so I got to experience something that people don't realize, that point in your career where you're just wondering, okay, how am I going to be able to support my family? It was a tough moment.
Now, you played with some greats in your time. We're talking Troy Aikman, Derek Thomas, Marcus Allen. But in 1993, it saw a quarterback called Joe Montana move to Kansas as he approached the end of his NFL career. He had a big impact on you, didn't he?
Yeah, he did right away. I think first, just the realization that I was playing with one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game, and a guy I used to watch in the eighth grade, and it was really difficult for me to just get used to the fact that I'm in a huddle with Joe Montana. And I remember the first huddle with him in practice, and I'm thinking, that's Joe Montana. You know, it was like, this is the greatest quarterback to ever play. But I do know that success leaves clues. And so my goal during those 2 years with Joe was, what can I learn from him? This guy has had a great career and continues to play well. What can I learn from him? And there were so many things I learned from him that I actually share today as a keynote motivational speaker. I share some of these points that I learned from one of the greatest quarterbacks to play the game.
And I think the first snap you took from him, didn't he hit you on the back of the head with the football?
Yeah. I love that story because it's so real. And basically, that first practice, I remember we're in the huddle, and I'm kind of like, this Joe Montana, you know. And the first play that was called was X-Hook, and that's me. And it's a 12-yard hook. You go up, turn around 12 yards. I could run that in my sleep. But I was so excited, like, I'm going to get Joe Montana's first pass as a Kansas City Chief. And so I get up to the line. I run my route, and about 10 yards, he hits me in the back of the head with the football. And I'm like wondering, what was that all about? And he's like, come here, kid. And he says, okay, I don't wait for you to get open. I've already read the defense. I know where the hole is. I throw it to an area and I expect you to be faster at the top of your route and get your head around quicker. And I kind of smiled and I thought, whoa, I've never had a quarterback tell me that. But I can see why this guy is great. But little tips like that changed my game and made me better as a wide receiver. So, yeah, there were so many things I learned just watching him perform every day.
And it coincided that season with probably your best season in the NFL team-wise. I mean, you made the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, that was a great year. That was a year that when people ask me what was my highlight, you know, my best year, that was the year because not only, like you said, playing with Joe, playing with Marcus, playing with Derek and other great athletes, but we had a great team. That was one of the stronger teams where I was on where we were more unified and working towards that goal. And we got to the AFC Championship game, one game before the Super Bowl, so it was pretty special.
Now, we haven't even touched on the fact yet that you weren't exactly NFL built, were you? 5'10" in the range of 157 to 160 pounds. So, I mean, that was a challenge on its own.
It was, and it's one of the points I tell people why I'm proud of my career, that I survived 9 years at 5'10", 157 pounds, and I was literally the lightest person during my years in the league. And so when people ask me how I survived, well, you know, one, I got a big heart. I play like a big guy. I was not afraid to come over the middle. I was not afraid to hit the, you know, the big linebackers. But, you know, as you evolve as a pro, you learn how to protect yourself. You know, you learn how to slide. You learn how to duck. But also I had pretty good speed. And a lot of times, you know, defenders were grabbing my ankles because I was moving by them or around them. And I can tell you, Chris, in 9 years, I probably took five really good hits. You know, five good hits where that was a hard hit. You know, so I had my fair share of injuries, but I did what I could to take care of my body.
But there was a little bit of smoke and mirrors, I hear, with your profile. Not a lot of people knew actually how light you were and how tall you were.
Yeah, they didn't. And I used to have this conversation with my head coach, Marty Schottenheimer. He would, early on, he was listing me at 180 in the program. And he didn't want the defense to know how small I really was. And I would say, Marty, I am not 180. They can tell. And I remember we negotiated it down to like 172 or 3 or something like that. But yeah, when a lot of the defenders saw me, they looked at me like, there's no way you're 180, you know.
Now, you ended up moving to the Atlanta Falcons, and I mean, as all NFL careers are for most outfield players, that they're short careers. So you were out after 9 years. And what sort of gap did that leave for you in your life?
Well, when I made the move to Atlanta, which was something I didn't want to do, I wanted to stay in Kansas City. But, you know, it's a business, and Casey didn't really see the value in me and paying what my market commanded, and Atlanta did. And so I made the move, and I was there for 2 years. But I tell you, Chris, right around that time, though, I was always thinking of life after football. I was one of those athletes who was always preparing to make the transition. I didn't want to be one of those guys who got lost, who wasn't planning for the future and did not know what to do. So I'm a business-minded person. I'm an entrepreneur. So I was always making contacts. I was networking with different people so that when I decided to retire, which I decided to retire from the Falcons at that year, I was ready to make that transition into the business world.
Well, let's just talk about what you're doing now, because for the looks of it's here, there, everywhere. It's a little bit of everything. Tell us what you do now and how you spend your time.
Well, yeah. So basically now, there's two things I'm really focusing on. One is I work in the health and wellness industry for a company called Isagenics, because I'm a health conscious person. I'm in the nutrition and all that. So it's a direct selling company I've worked with for a while. I love it because it gives me a product line I can take care of my body, but I can also help other people, because there's a lot of people out there that want to lose weight or want more energy or want to improve their performance or their health. So it gives me that avenue. But then the other part is I fulfilled a long-time dream of becoming a best-selling author. And I wrote my first book literally 2 years ago this month, called When Opportunity Knocks, Ace Your Fire Ways to Take Advantage. And I wrote that because during my journey I saw so many people miss opportunities, you know, or miss a chance to achieve a goal, a dream, or something like that. So I wanted to kind of write a blueprint. You know, here's how you can seize the opportunities you're pursuing, no matter what they are. And so that becoming an author allowed me to launch my speaking career, which I've been speaking for years. I started speaking, you know, when I was in the NFL in the off season, but it's now become more of a career to where now I'm keynote speaking or motivational speaking to businesses, to organizations, to schools, and I can take the experiences I have and I've gone through and show them how they're really life skills and how I can help you be the best of the best of what you do. So between that, my plate is full, but I love what I'm doing. I have a passion for what I'm doing, because when you've got a passion for something, you know you're going to do it full speed and you'll do it to the best of your ability. But yeah, that's what we have going on these days.
Well, I mean, you talk about that's taking up your time. I'm going to go with an absolutely amazing story. Now, after bringing up three kids of your own, your life took another turn back in 2007. You became a family of 10. I mean, I'm going to repeat that, but you became a family of 10. Tell us about that, because it's an amazing story.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. That's when life throws you a curveball, you know. So my wife and I, we have three children, and that was kind of our plan. Let's have three children, and we have LaJordan Jr. and Dante and Camille. And 9 years ago, I suddenly get a call from my nieces and nephews in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There's some problems going on out there. So I fly out there the next day to check on my nieces and nephews. And then 24 hours later after that, I'm standing in a courthouse before a judge. And the judge tells me that we're going to take your five nieces and nephews and place them in foster homes. But hey, you're the next of kin, Mr. Burden. What would you like to do? So it was one of those moments where you're just like, you're kind of shocked and you're wondering, what do you do? But I immediately did what any smart husband would do. And I say, Judge, let me call my wife first, you know. And after a 5-minute conversation, my wife, Rain, and I, we both agreed, let's take the children. And we took the children. We gained guardianship over them. And they've been with us ever since. But that was one of those moments where, you know, we saw it as an opportunity to impact five more lives. And when we made that decision, a lot of people questioned it. Why would you do that? But that's how my wife and I were thinking. We can impact five more lives. And that's what we did. But it's one of my teaching points on the road. And I tell people, sometimes in life you have a plan and you follow that plan. But sometimes you're throwing a curveball and you got to call an audible. You know, let's use a football analogy. You got to call an audible. And that's what we did. But when you call that audible, you make a commitment to it full speed, and it always works out in the end, and it certainly has.
And you probably, you, more no doubt, you, you'd call that the greatest opportunity that you've taken in, throughout your whole career and your whole life, surely.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because not only the impact we've made on their lives, the impact they've made on our lives, too, even my children. You know, it's been a growing growing experience for all of us, but to see these five lives be impacted in a positive way, I mean, you know, my wife and I sleep well at night, and that was one of the things we thought of. We said, if we don't take the children, when we have the ability, how are we going to feel every day knowing that we could have made a difference?
Well, so tell people then, where can they get your book? Where can they find out more about J.J. Burden?
The best place to go to find out more about J.J. Burden is jjburden.com. That's my website. You can go there. You can order my book. If you order my book, it ships right away. I personally sign each book. I also have a newsletter called The Burden Report, which you can sign up for. It's free. But once a month, I will release some kind of positive, motivational content, because I have a lot of people that, you know, they want encouragement. They want to be motivated. And so I share content there. So I encourage people to go there and sign up. I'm all over social media, Chris, under the username JJ Burden. So I love to interact with people and just, you know, see how I can help them.
And, well, before we go, I've got to get a prediction for you. It's, well, with season's not even started yet. Who's going to win the Super Bowl next season?
Well, I'll tell you this. First thing I'm going to say is I'm rooting for my Chiefs. You know, I think the Chiefs are lining everybody up. They're getting their people in place. But I got to tell you something. I'm worried about the Patriots repeating again. I mean, they continue to add more and more, you know, players to their team that's going to make them even better. And as long as Brady is healthy and still playing the way he is, I wouldn't be surprised if New England wins another one.
Well, JJ, thanks for joining us today, telling us all about what is a fascinating career and a career that's got a long, long way to go yet. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate you having me on and giving me the opportunity to share, and keep up the good work.